Radio Prague News.
The head of the upper house, the Senate, has called for Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek to consider stepping down after insulting comments about gays, Jews and the church. President Václav Klaus has approved Agriculture Minister Jakub Szebesta to also serve as Environment Minister. And Greenpeace activists have occupied a chimney at the power plant at the centre of the row, which caused the former Environment Minister to quit. The head of the Czech upper house, the Senate, has called for the leader of the centre-right Civic Democrats, Mirek Topolánek, not to stand in upcoming elections and to consider his post as party leader after insulting comments about gays and the church. Senate head Premysl Sobotka, who is a leading member of the Civic Democrats, made the call in a short statement, adding that the comments were inflammatory and conflicted with basic ODS ideas. Former Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek said in an interview with a gay magazine that Transport Minister Gustav Slamečka would back down if the going got tough. He said the same applied to Prime Minister Jan Fischer because of his Jewish origins. In separate comments, Mr. Topolánek said the church had brainwashed people and made idiots of the masses. Czech President Václav Klaus on Monday approved Agriculture Minister Jakub Szebesta taking over the vacant post of Environment Minister in the caretaker government. Prime Minister Jan Fischer said Mr. Szebesta had the skills to handle two ministries until the cabinet's mandate comes to an end after general elections in May. Mr. Fischer said he wanted to fill the post as quickly as possible to avoid a political wrangle in the pre-election period. Former Environment Minister Jan Dusik quit as Environment Minister last week in a row over the modernisation of a controversial power plant. Top Green Party leaders were due to meet on Monday evening to discuss the Prime Minister's choice of the new Environment Minister. The post had been occupied by a Green Party nominee. Party leader Andrej Liška said Monday that Mr. Szebesta had already marked himself out in office for his anti-environmental decisions. He added that the country now appeared to have a social democrat-dominated government on the eve of elections. Mr. Szebesta was originally nominated by the left-of-centre party. A group of Greenpeace activists have climbed to the top of a 300-metre chimney at the coal-fired-powered plant at the centre of the row which caused Jan Dusik to quit as Environment Minister. A spokesman for state electricity producer CEZ said around 12 activists forced their way into the Prunerov site in northwest Bohemia. Greenpeace leaders say they will stay up the chimney for several nights. Greenpeace accused the company of responsibility for Mr. Dusik's resignation and say the new Minister of Environment can only banish suspicions he is a CEZ placeman by blocking its plans. A report by Norwegian organisation DNV for the Environment Ministry last week said CEZ had not used the best available technology for the proposed modernisation, with higher pollution resulting. The weather should stay sunny in the coming days. Daytime temperatures should rise to 16 degrees Celsius by Thursday. I'm Chris Johnston and that was the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, Civic Democrat Chairman Mirek Topolánek finds himself in hot water over comments about Christians, Jews and homosexuals. We talk to some of the best English teachers of the year, as chosen by a local endowment fund, and take a look at this year's Prague Playwriting Competition for English Language Theatre. And later on in our program, we'll speak with historian Andreas Wiedemann on the resettlement of the Sudetenland after World War II.
It was clear that there are not enough people to resettle the whole regions.
I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. The chairman of the Civic Democratic Party, Mirek Topolánek, has found himself in no small amount of trouble over an interview he gave to a gay magazine. It included controversial statements about one Jewish and one homosexual member of the government, as well as the suggestion that the Catholic Church had made idiots of the masses. Mr. Topolánek later apologized, but has come in for some criticism, including from inside his own party. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Mirek Topolánek on Sunday apologized to Christians, to Jews, and to gays for comments he made in a recent interview and photo shoot for the Czech gay magazine Louis. In video footage posted online by the tabloid Blesk, the former prime minister said the Catholic Church had brainwashed people and made idiots of the masses. When asked how he would describe gays, Mr. Topolánek gave a jumbled answer, saying the Minister of Transport, Gustav Slamečka, would fold if things got really tough. He then said Prime Minister Jan Fischer would do the same, because, quote, he is Jewish. A little earlier I discussed the controversy with political analyst Jiří Pehe.
I think that we have to see what Mr. Topolánek said in the context of his previous rather unfortunate statements. He has a history of making really outrageous and sometimes outright stupid comments, especially when he ventures into some historical context. So I am afraid that this is not the first time, and certainly it's not something that is taken out of any context, because there is a context, and that's Mr. Topolánek's personal history of such statements. A politician, certainly a politician in a moderately developed democratic country, should know that certain things, certain words, sentences, or references to certain very sensitive issues simply can be taken out of context, and he should be very careful when he makes such statements.
Mr. Topolánek's apology on Sunday did not succeed in extinguishing the controversy. Senate Chair Přemysl Sobotka, a leading member of the Civic Democrats, has called on his party's leader not to stand in May's elections. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Jan Fischer has said he will keep communication with him to a minimum. Jiří Pehe again.
I think that the statements by Mr. Topolánek maybe affected something in Mr. Fischer's mind that is very difficult to excuse. It goes to the roots of his identity, and certainly it's not just the racial or religious slur that Mr. Topolánek used, but also the fact that Mr. Fischer has helped Mr. Topolánek, just like he helped Mr. Paroubek and other Czech politicians, by being willing to lead the government of experts at a time when politicians in the Czech Republic totally failed.
In a little over 2 months, Czechs will vote on the next government. And the controversy surrounding Mirek Topolánek has certainly not helped and may have considerably dampened his party's fortunes.
Thanks to Jan Wellinger for that report. Good English teachers are in great demand in the Czech Republic. While more and more children want to learn the language, schools are facing a serious lack of qualified teachers. The Prague Post Endowment Fund is aiming to improve the situation by organizing the Best Teacher of English competition. Ruth Frankova has more.
To make my favorite sandwich, you need two pieces of bread, fish, ketchup.
A group of children from an elementary school in the center of Prague provide musical accompaniment at the Best Teacher of English ceremony, which took place at the American Center in Prague on Friday. Their teacher, Maria Vučková, was voted one of the 7 best English teachers of 2009. She has been working as a teacher for the past 14 years.
Originally, I worked as an interpreter for Spanish and English. And then I married, I had children, and after that, the school which my son attended, they needed an English teacher. So I said maybe for some time I could substitute the one who was missing, and I started to teach. And I found out that I liked it so much, because I could do all the creative things with children. I could do drama, songs, drawings, and everything I was doing with my son at those days. So that's how I became a teacher.
Switching from interpreting to teaching is quite unusual. More often, teachers quit the profession to find a better paid job. Mrs. Vuchkova admits she too wouldn't be able to teach if it wasn't for her husband, who makes enough to support the family. Teachers also complain that their work is not appreciated, something which the Best Teacher of English Award is trying to change. Bibiana Duharova is an associate publisher for the Prague Post.
What we are trying to do in the Czech Republic or in the European region is to spread the use of English, learning of English, and basically recognize teachers' efforts. The history of this, of our little effort here is very short. The first year was in 2008. The best teacher is nominated by the directors of each school. There were points given to each teacher according to their achievement in school, according to how well their students, what the results their students had, and then we chose seven best of those that had the highest score.
All the winning teachers agree that being a good teacher means above all enjoying their job. Eva Polakova from Liberec Technical Secondary School was another of the seven winners.
My students and the opportunity to be with young people and to learn something new, because you have to learn something new if you want to be a good teacher.
Eva Polakova, ending that report by Ruth Frankova. To those of you who may just be tuning in, we thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. Sunday night was the opening night for the top three submissions to this year's Prague playwriting contest at the city's Divadlo Ponec. The winner of the contest, who will take home a cash prize, will be announced at the closing night next Tuesday. One of the playwrights in the race for the award is Josh Kasten. His submission, The Great Indoors, is set in the rural southern United States, where a Czech-British couple gets stranded. Sarah Barufka talked to Josh Kasten about the process of seeing his play produced and why he decided to participate in the contest.
I've actually come to the Prague Playwriting Contest the last 3 years prior to this, so I've come every year since it started, and it's been pretty good, and I've always thought to myself, all right, one of these days I'm going to try, you know, I'm going to try and submit something. And this year I finally had the time to actually write something.
And where did you take your inspiration from? You say you've lived in Prague for 3 years. Now there's also a lot of the play seems to be set in the south of America. So where does it all come from?
Well, I'm from Louisiana. So I'm surrounded by all sorts of rednecks or whatever you want to call them. I don't actually have any experience in the theater at all. I learned how to write screenplays, but I found out through this process how different the theater is from television.
I also noticed you do include one Czech character in the play, the pregnant woman, and she says some things that are very kind of indicative of Czech culture. So were you trying to include the culture of where you live in this redneck scene? Was that the goal?
Yeah, I thought adding a little Czech spice would give me a better chance of having my play produced in the Czech Republic.
And how was it to see your play come to life when you worked with a director and the actors? Maybe you can tell me a bit about the casting process too.
Oh, it was great. The rules of this contest state that I have complete control over the script. However, I have no control over casting or directing or anything like that. So lucky for me, this has actually been great. They've done a great job. I've had Ulrich Neumann is the director. He's very experienced. He's got, I don't know, 30 years of experience or something. So I was just very fortunate to have them. And I sort of was more of a watcher and spectator than actually active in the process.
And what are your hopes now that the contest is in full swing?
Oh, I mean, I just want people to laugh and have a good time and feel like when they come over here and pay, whatever, 200 crowns or so to come in here, they feel like they actually got 200 crowns worth and they can go home with a smile on their face.
Josh Kasten was speaking to Sarah Barufka. Still ahead, there's our weekly one-on-one, but first, the news from the world of sport, brought to you by Ian Willoughby.
Martina Sablikova ended what's been a dream season on a high on Sunday. when she took the women's overall title at the World All-Round Speed Skating Championships at Heerenveen in the Netherlands. Sablikova, who's 22, finished third in the 1500 metres, but won her favourite event, the 5000 metres, to finish less than half a second ahead of her nearest rival across four events. That win made it two World All-Round Championship titles in a row for Sablikova, who is also World, European and Double Olympic champion, as well as the world record holder in the 5000 metres. The Czech's latest success has perhaps been slightly overshadowed by the news that her coach Petr Novák may quit. Novák, who got Sablikova started in speed skating when she was 11 years old, told the newspaper Sport that he'll consider his future if the amount of money the state puts into speed skating isn't increased. Moving on to cross-country skiing, and Lukáš Bauer finished second in this year's season-closing World Cup. First place had already been sealed by Norway's Petter Northug before the final race, and the Czech did well to hold on to second spot overall, with a ninth place finish in the 15-kilometre freestyle in Sweden's Falun on Sunday. Bauer, who was suffering from illness for 2 months earlier in the season, told reporters he regarded coming second in the World Cup as a huge success. Football now, and the Czech league has been hit by allegations of match-fixing in a game at the end of last season. The owner of Bohemians Praha, Karel Kapr, says Sigma Olomouc's goalkeeper Petr Dobryš offered and later paid his players 300,000 crowns to lose the match, ensuring Olomouc got into the qualifying stages of the Europa League. Olomouc's players and officials have strenuously denied the allegations, which are being investigated by the police. Meanwhile, questions are being asked about why the whole thing has blown up now, so long after the alleged bribery took place. Back on the field, Sparta Prague have gone top of the league after a 4-0 home win over Olomouc, with two of those goals coming from Libor Sionko, who has 39 caps for the Czech Republic. That win meant Sparta overtook Teplice after the latter were beaten 1-0 at home by Brno. Jablonec, who beat Příbram 2-1 away, are third. That's all the sport for today.
Many thanks to Ian Willoughby. Just a reminder, you're listening to the International Service of Czech Radio, broadcasting from Prague on shortwave via satellite and on the internet. The expulsion of the German-speaking frontier region of the Czech Republic after World War II is often talked about even today. On this week's One-on-One, Chris Johnstone looks at the other side of the situation, resettlement, in an interview with German historian Andreas Wiedemann.
German journalist and historian Andreas Wiedemann is the author of a book about the resettlement of the Sudetenland following the expulsion of the German population at the end of World War II. The title translates from German as Come With Us to the Borderland, Resettlement and New Settlers in the Former Sudetenland, 1945-1952. Unlike the expulsion, the resettlement has been given scant coverage, although the consequences still scar large parts of the country. I asked him why he had seized upon the subject.
I was very interested in this topic because about the expulsion or the transfer of the German population from the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia, there are a lot of books and works, but it was interesting that up to today, you can't find very much like material about the time after the transfer. So, interesting question for me: what happened when the Germans went away? So, this is a main question in this book.
And what conclusions did you come to about what was the resettlement of this area that used to be populated by the Germans? Did it seem to be planned very well?
It was planned, maybe not from the beginning. The problem was like directly after the Second World War, there existed plans from the Czech exile about transfer of the Germans and the new structures of the new state after the war. But there were no exactly plans about how to organize the whole process. the idea that the Germans had to leave the country after the war. This is a very clear idea in the beginning. And of course, the second step is what will follow the transfer of the Germans, and the logical next step is the resettlement of these regions with Czech and Slovakian people. But there was no exactly plan how to manage it. So in the beginning, in the summer of 1945, it was not organized. It was maybe a spontaneous migration processes. People left home, ran to the border regions, had a look what's going on, and where is it possible maybe to find a new house or new work or new possibilities. But then after summer and autumn 45, it was planned. There were a lot of different state institutions who organized the whole process. There was a resettlement office, and all the ministries in the government were involved in this process. So then it was very detailed, planned. The results may be a little bit different than it was planned, but it was organized.
My impression is that whatever was organized, looking today at the results, they look fairly disappointing, because a lot of these areas still look fairly run down, still underpopulated, and even in a certain sense, underdeveloped compared to what they were before.
Of course, the problem is it fast became clear that there won't be enough people to fill up the border regions after the Germans left. And this was a very clear thing also for the politicians. They said, when we will achieve a population of 75% of the pre-war inhabitants, then it's okay, then it's enough, because it was clear that there are not enough people to resettle the whole regions. There were a big difference from the regions. For example, the northern, very industrial regions, there are many problems today, but not all of these problems are bound to this resettlement process. Directly after the war, the first maybe 10 years after the war, the northern Bohemian industrial regions, I think their life and working life worked, because, for example, in Ústí nad Labem, in the town of Ústí nad Labem, there were a little bit more people than before the war. But when you, for example, look into the western regions, western Bohemian regions, like Karlovy Vary, there, after the war, were 50% less people than before the war.
I always got the impression that maybe the communists weren't really too sure what to make of these border regions. In one sense, maybe, especially in the West, I get the impression that they maybe deliberately didn't want to fill them up, and maybe just to leave them as a sort of buffer zone in case there was some conflict.
The communists, on the one hand side, they always said how important is the whole resettlement process, but on the other hand, they decided to use the whole resettlement process for a new structure in economics. For example, there were 7,000 companies were closed after the war. Some of these companies were moved to Slovakia, so it was the plan for the whole industrialization policy to industrialize Slovakia. Of course, this was a clear policy to use the resettlement to change the whole structure. It was not like a positive aspect for the regions, this kind of policy, of course. And when you talk about the western regions especially, there were problems. The resettlement and the very big lack of new settlers, because not enough people came. And then the second aspect is the border with Germany, because a lot of people, and also communists, were afraid of maybe a new war. And a new war, the people thought about it that Germany will, together with America and England, fight against Eastern Europe. So the people at the western border were very afraid. And so the communist policy was also really to close this border.
During your research, did you come across some surprising things that you think that weren't well known before?
I was surprised that, for example, not only the Germans or the Hungarians or the so-called like traitors or people who collaborated with the Nazi regime had problems, but there was also the position of the Czech old settlers, the people who lived in the border regions the whole life or before and during the war, and also during at that time when the border regions were part of the Hitler Germany. And there were like a few hundred thousand Czech people, and a lot of these people, they had German husbands, for example. And I was surprised that after the war there was really big problems, because the new settlers and also the government in Prague very often thought that these Czech old settlers are not reliable people, because they had like contacts with Germans their whole life. They stayed in the border regions during the occupation and all this stuff, and they had very big problems, and there existed plans to settle them, to move them away. So there were really plans to move some 100,000 people or thousands of people to the inner district. Of course, there were plans and they did not make it. But I was very surprised that also in the press there were a lot of articles about like the old Czech settlers in the border regions, and you have to be careful, and it's not sure if you can trust them and stuff like this. So I was very surprised, because it was a very big thing at that time.
That was Andreas Wiedemann ending this week's edition of One on One and our program for today. You can find us online at radio.cz. And if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at english@radio.cz, on Facebook under Radio Prague, or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, and all of us here at Radio Prague, we thank you for listening and we wish you the best.